Good morning. Can you hear me all right there? If I was you, I wouldn't have clapped until after you heard me speak, but that's your personal preference. Why am I here, do you think? Yep. So has anyone got any encouragement for me tonight? I'm going to win, okay? You need to know that when people come up to me, they generally, after we lose, I generally get, Ian, you lost, which is really useful. And then I got, you've stuffed up my virtual picks. And because of you, I'm now 7,622 on the virtuals. As if, what do you think that does to me? Piles guilt. Okay, all of a sudden I've stuffed up someone's whole life because they're now 7,963 on virtual. And then the next one, the next words of encouragement I get are, you better win on Saturday because I've picked you again. There'd be no one like that here, would there? Now, I'm actually looking around this audience. I wouldn't consider myself an accomplished public speaker, but I enjoy sharing what I do and who I am, I guess. When I sort of write a speech for a place, I've really got no idea who's going to turn up. So I kind of expected about 20 to 30 people, half asleep, but you all look like you're awake. And there's a lot more than what I expected. So I'm going to muddle my way through this a little bit. But first of all, I guess I'm here because I'm a rugby coach and I've got a profile. Would that be pretty fair? And so for some reason in our society, rugby's quite an important... Oh, by the way, there's a Crusader shirt back there. Recent convert.
Still in the process.
So I'm going to rip up that speech because that speech was going to tell you some of the secrets. But I guess, is anything you'd like to say about that, Jeff? Are you born and bred a Crusader?
Absolutely, brother.
So how long have you been living up here? 94. So basically in 13, 14 years, you can't change your mind. Okay. Yeah, that speaks volumes about you as a person, I'm afraid. I've been in the coaching business. This is my fifth year coaching the Chiefs, and I'll just give you a little bit of background. I played a lot for Waikato, then sort of straight into coaching, and I guess my evolution from playing into coaching, I mean, rugby is an interesting sort of industry to be involved in. And it started off, I guess, when I was 19 and I got my first game for Waikato. And in the papers, there was these two adjectives before my name and it was very promising. And I was pretty excited about reading that. A couple of years later, they dropped the very and I became promising. And then about the age of 24, all of a sudden, there's no adjective. It's just Ian Foster in the paper. The next step, when you know that things are starting to change, is a word pops up and it's called seasoned. So at 26, you're seasoned. Are you seasoned, do you think, Gordon? Just about? Right. Then you get to that stage of 28, 29, and guess what the next word pops up is? Veteran. And trust me, that changes your life. That one little word in the paper changes your life, and all of a sudden you're starting to think about the end of your life. You're starting to think, this is it for me. I knew it was time to get out of playing rugby when, pretty sure it was Evan Pegden in the Waikato Times, used the words legendary stalwart. At the age of 33. Now, who's 33 here? Anyone? Legendary stalwart. What do you think about that? I mean, that's like a sort of a bronze statue, something that's been dead for 100 years. And to be quite frank, I was playing like that. So I then went into coaching, and I guess that's kind of a little bit of the life cycle of a player. You go through that phase. It was 14 years I played for Waikato. Then I had 3 years as an assistant coach, and then I was fortunate enough to go into a head coach role with Waikato for 2 years, and subsequently the Chiefs and the Junior All Blacks. So I still get people, and I'm sure there's some here that say, well, what do you actually do for your job? Because you're sure you're coaching the weekends, but what about the rest of the week? And what about the 6 months of a year that the Chiefs aren't playing? There'd be no one here that thinks that, though, is there? One at the back? Yeah, no, fair question. There's a bit of a bad attitude in that corner. And that just reveals that concept of one bad apple, it'll start to spread. Where was I? Anyone remember where I was? What do I do the rest of the day? Yep, well, I got a wife who loves me, thank goodness. Been married 20-something years, 22 years, 3 kids, 15, 9 and 7, my kids, a boy and 2 girls. I've got, and I guess when you look at my job now, for 6 months a year, the Chiefs come together on the 1st of December. We basically train full-time December, January pre-season, then we're into the championship. And basically from now, from the championship onwards, it's basically non-stop. And it's you just hop on the treadmill and then you get off end of May. And there's very little time off. It's just a lot of work, to be honest. And at the end of that, in this lovely PC world we have now, we do about 2 weeks of reviewing and telling people how they can go away and improve. Then we spend 2 weeks writing reports. Anyone understand this, what I'm talking about now? Then I guess it's a little bit of time off, and then we're into the Air New Zealand Cup with obviously, which is Waikato playing here. And for me, the Air New Zealand Cup's basically a selection time. So I go around and watch a lot of Waikato, Bay of Plenty counties, a lot of the teams play. And then at the end of October, we pick the team for the following year. So that's kind of the treadmill that we go on from a coaching perspective. So I don't want to share too much about that side of it, but if you're interested, you can ask me questions later on. I guess first of all, I want to share a little bit of my testimony. And my testimony is going to take about 3 minutes. Is that a relief? And then I'm going to ask you guys what you want me to speak on. But who's got a dramatic testimony? Anyone here? I won't ask you to share it. I'm really disappointed, because shouldn't you all put your hand up for that one? Because I often get apologetic about sharing my testimony, but reality is it's the time that that my life changed. And my testimony in some ways is boring. I got a Presbyterian minister as a dad, so now all of a sudden you've stereotyped me down into that sort of thing, haven't you? And so that's all right. And so my mum and dad, incredible people, really, very faithful, still are, and were fantastic role models for me and my 2 brothers. And I became a Christian at an Easter camp at Narrows, and sitting by the banks of the Waikato River, and we had to contemplate 2 verses. And I resisted it because the Easter camp speaker was my dad. So you can imagine being a 15-year-old boy going to Easter camp. I would have preferred to check out the girls there, but my father was there speaking, so I had to listen and behave. But Romans 12, 1 and 2, I'm sure a lot of you know it. Therefore, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing and perfect will. The other 2 verses that challenged me, and I guess for me it was more, I had to get challenged intellectually about the life that I was living and what I believed in. And that's kind of where when I became a Christian. Had lots of ups and downs since then, but that's kind of a little bit about me from when I started on this walk. Now, I've got some notes here, and I'm just trying to figure out what to speak to you people, because I'm here, and I guess in some ways the reason I'm here is I'm a Chiefs coach, and therefore there's probably a perception that I'm reasonably successful. Would that be fair? Do you get too many major failures stand up and speak to you to attract people to get you out of bed in the morning? I want to share with you that, so I want to talk to you about a part of success, and this is not sort of a positive thinking talk, but I want to share you about a part of success that I think is really valid and we should talk about more. And the key part, one of the key parts of success is failure. And it's learning to deal with that. And it's learning to accept that as being, not accept it as being part of our life, but accept it as being something that we're probably going to go through at times. And often the measure of us, and I guess the measure of our faith, is how we come out the other side. Anyone understand that? Okay. And being a Chiefs coach, this is a pretty important theme for me right now, isn't it? That's all what you're thinking. You're all thinking, ah, he watched the tape of the Chiefs Hurricanes last week. But I guess today's wise, successful people, people who are strong, who are successful in life and business, you know, like Max Davies down there and stuff like that, they have all been through, they've actually got there by the way that they've dealt with the obstacles that get put in front of them in life. And yet the world doesn't necessarily focus on those things too much, does it? It holds the successful people up in front of us as something we're supposed to emulate, and yet in reality we often don't see the cracks in those people or how they've got to that point. And so I guess you're never going to get someone up here who hasn't failed in something, you know, for all have fallen short of the glory of God. So how have I failed? Is that a good starting point? As a player, my first 3 years with Waikato, I mean, I played 148 games for Waikato, which is a record. No one's played any more games for Waikato than me. I sat on the bench 50 games. Probably not too many people sat on the bench for 50 games either. Had some great stories on the bench. Because in the early days, if you sat on the bench, you never got on the park. It's not like nowadays that you're rolling your subs on all the time. In those days, we used to sit halfway up the grandstand because you never, some cruel players on the park sometimes would go down, pretend they're injured, and make the reserves run all the way down the grandstand, run along the sideline, and then they'd get up and start playing again, then you'd go all the way back. In my latter years, I was on the bench for a game, and there was a new guy playing his first game. He was on the bench for his first game, a guy called Jason Spice, a young halfback. Not sure you remember him. And he was down one end of the reserve bench. This is up in the grandstand. I was at the other end, so I thought I'd have a bit of fun with him. So just before half time, I sent the message down that he was the youngest. He had to go and get the pies for the reserves. And he looked at me and said, "You've got to be joking." I said, "Well, I mean, I was actually captain of the team, and this was a pre-season. I was on having a rest." And I said, "No, you're the youngest guy's going to get the pies. Go and get him." And he said, "Well, I haven't got any money." I said, "What do you mean you haven't got any money? The youngest guy's, but it's tradition. You're supposed to go and have money to get a pie." So anyway, he said, "I haven't got any money, Fozzie." And I said, "Well, mate, you've got to run down and see the manager on the sideline and get some money for the pies." So he ran all the way down the grandstand. And I could see him running along and talk to the manager who was busy watching the game and trying to sort the details out and ask for money for pies for the reserves. And it's a testimony to my poor character and reputation that the manager immediately looked up because he knew exactly what I'd done. I failed university French. I did a marketing degree at Waikato, and I failed 101 French. It was the only course I failed. Did I hear you say, why was I doing French in the first place? It was because I did French at school from third form to seventh form. The reason I continued with French is that in fifth form, I was at Forest View High School in Tokorawa. The French teacher was a lovely looking lady. And I was the only one in the class. So I carried on through to seventh form and did very well. At university, there was a male lecturer. I failed in business. I set a business up when I was assistant coach, and I thought it was going to be good because at those stage, coaching wasn't really a career. It was something that you dabbled in. And basically, when I got the head coach job for Waikato in 2002, I kept this business going because I was offered a one-year deal for Waikato. So it was a risky business for me to do that. So I kept my business going, but I put someone else in charge, and it didn't work very well for me. And it hurt. Didn't get my balance right. I realised I couldn't do two things. 2002, my first year coaching Waikato, we were the best team in the round robin, and I lost the final. And you can say, well, that's not a bad failure. But for me, it was, because we'd really built strong through that year. And I felt as a new coach that I probably didn't do the preparation I should have before that final. And I guess there's other phases of my time that I've got too focused on the worldly success and the glory, I guess, that this world gives rugby people. And I've found that there's been times that if I've dwelt too much on that side of it, that the rest of my life's become a mess really, really quickly. And I've lost that foundation stuff. So I guess, I mean, am I cheering you up or what? And I guess what I'm trying to get is you've got to keep reminding yourself that if something's gone wrong, then you've failed at something. You don't necessarily have failed as a person. And I think sometimes we find that hard to distinguish between failing to do something, failing at a goal, and failing ourselves as a person. Because the world really does glorify success, doesn't it? You know, I mean, you look at infomercials, who's selling you the latest gym machine. It's always a supposedly successful person in another area of life. We're supposed to emulate those people, aren't we? We're supposed to go and buy their books, read their DVDs. It's the same in the Christian community. There's successful people. We're supposed to duplicate how they got successful. And again, I repeat that often what we don't see is the process that those people have gone through to get to that point, the setbacks and the obstacles they've gone through. And I want to give you a couple of really historic examples. Who's heard of Wolfgang Mozart? Okay. Now, he probably is considered one of the musical genius of all time. Would that be fair? Well, I don't listen to him too much, but he was told by the king at the time that his opera, Figaro, was far too noisy and had too many notes. And it got canned. Is that interesting? Yeah, okay. I'll try another one then. Vincent van Gogh, whose paintings now sell for millions and millions, highest price ever. Do you know that he only sold one painting in his lifetime? Only one painting of his sold in his lifetime. And he only became famous after he died. So I've got 10 pictures in my garage that I've painted. And trust me, my family's going to be rich. Thomas Edison, he was apparently a really smart dude. He must have been an Elam. The most prolific inventor in history, correct? He's got a whole list of stuff that he was smart enough to do. He was considered unteachable as a kid and got kicked out of school. Albert Einstein, who was an old fella, supposed to be pretty smart, he was told by his German school teacher that he was illogical and the school system couldn't fix him. They kicked him out of school. And I guess closer to the time is one little example that I've had the last 2 months in my rugby is a halfback called Brendan Leonard, who 12 months ago Went down to the New Zealand Colt trials under 21 and missed out on the New Zealand Colts. 4 months later, he was in the All Blacks, and 12 months later, he was a star going to the World Cup. And he actually dealt with that under 21 thing pretty particularly well. So I guess now you're saying, well, that's the bad news. What's the lesson? Is that what I hear you saying? I know the Crusader guy's got the failure stuff all sorted, but I can't really pick on him, can I? No, because they're winning and at the top of the table. It's sickening, isn't it? And that is the only reason you wore that shirt, isn't it? Yeah, it is irking me. I must share that. I guess what I want to share, I guess my little experience is that success is not just about winning, just like failure is not just about losing. And in fact, my experience in my life is success can be as dangerous, if not more dangerous, than failure. And I've heard this great quote, I don't know who said it, but failure isn't so bad if it doesn't attack the heart. Success is all right if it doesn't go to the head. And it's quite a powerful sort of thing. I guess for me and my business, you guys know whether I'm being successful or failed pretty easily, don't you? That be fair? Am I a success or a failure from last week? Go on, put your hand up, the people who think I'm a failure. Exactly. Yeah, we are playing tonight. Yes. Learning to deal with the ups and downs that come on our road, learning to deal with the potholes that we hit, are often the key to our growth. And I guess in a nutshell, if in failing to achieve a goal that we set for ourselves or an objective in our life, we lose our self-confidence and consider ourselves a failure, if we actually give up before it's over and vow to never try again, and if we then give up having any goals again because it's actually too hard and we save ourselves from that hurt, then I think indeed we have failed. However, if in failing to achieve a goal, be it a personal goal or family goal, whatever, if in failing to achieve that goal, we treat it as failing to do something rather than us specifically failing as a person. In other words, if we fight the discouragement that comes with that, if we think about why we failed and promise ourselves to learn from that lesson and don't keep making that same mistake again and again, in other words, if we're reflective and we make sure we review what went wrong and we learn from that, or if we can laugh at what we did wrong and then move on and not let it dwell in our minds or our actions, then I think we've already started on that road to success and achievement. And I guess I'm using success, but I mean, it's about achieving what we want to achieve in our lives. So I guess for me, if I go back and use some of the areas that I failed, how many games did I have on the bench? 50. So I guess I went on to play 14 years for Waikato, like I shared. And to me, it was a huge goal of mine just to be the best that I could be on the rugby park. And I think I took a lot of pride in the longevity that I stayed in there. I guess for a lot of people, they just call it stubbornness. What did I learn from failing university French? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So some failures do hurt. What did I learn about trying to run a business and coach and try to have one thing that I was passionate about and then try to have a security blanket of something else in my life? I realised that it just doesn't work like that. I think that, and I'll share this a bit later on, I think that God doesn't work like that, does he? He doesn't really want us to have a security blanket that, oh, well, if this path doesn't work, I'm going to go down this path and try to balance both things, because unfortunately God's quite cunning. This faith thing doesn't quite operate like that. Often we've just got to take a whole step out. I learnt that lesson. And I guess the coaching thing about the final, for me it was just about making sure that I learnt as much from our wins as our losses. And sometimes when you win a lot, It's very easy to become complacent. It's very easy to think that you're on the right path, that you've got the formula right, and often we don't spend the same energy trying to find out how to get better. The good thing about losing is, I mean, what do you think my last week's been like? Seriously, it's focus. What's some other words that would describe my last week? Very intent, anxious. Yeah, that starts from now. Yeah. Determination. Yep. So I guess what I'm proving to you is I stand before you as someone that has failed a lot. And I got to admit, I haven't enjoyed going through that process. I wish that life wasn't like that for me. I wish I'd win every game. I wish I'd achieve every goal. I wish I wouldn't have to go through the downs of life to actually get where I've got to at the moment. But I guess that's part of life, isn't it? And I think that for me, it's recognising that those sort of obstacles aren't terminal. You still with me? Okay. There's another quote from Nelson Boswell. Anyone know who he is? Yeah, me neither. Seriously, me neither. The difference, but I used this with my team a little while back. The difference between greatness and mediocrity. You understand what that word means, Jeff? Mediocrity? The difference between greatness and mediocrity is often how an individual views a mistake they've made. Now, the next line I've got written down is, what sort of talk is this for a Christian men's group? And you're going to tell, because you guys have all got this sussed, haven't you? This success-failure business. Well, surely you have, because surely as Christians, we understand this whole concept better than anyone. Shouldn't we? Because isn't that what the gospel message is about? The salvation of mankind has been saved from our sins, saved from failure. I guess we know that we've failed in God's sight, but yet through him we've been redeemed, that we've experienced God's forgiveness for our past failures, and we now have that freedom from guilt, freedom from our own egos thinking that we're better than we really are, and freedom from that sense of failure, it won't work again for us, therefore we're not going to step out again. Does that sound pretty good? I thought I'd better say this because we had some neat songs, and so it's almost like you have songs, then you have a preacher, so I thought I'd better say something that sounds like preaching. Yet reality is, we are no different from the world, I don't think, in how we deal with failure. And we forget. Don't we forget? We go through the same adversity in life as anyone else, generally. And we're generally not immune to that feeling, therefore, of being inadequate, poorly prepared, and having failed. And are they likeable feelings for you to hold on to? Do they hold you back? We often see other Christians as having it more together than us. You know? Hey, it's Ed Foster, Chiefs coach, coming to speak. He's an altogether sort of guy. Reality is, I'm just like anyone in this room, aren't I? And we see other Christians as being more spiritually alive, and sometimes that's the case, I guess. Sometimes it's not. We see other Christians as being better communicators, more effective sharers of their faith, more diligent workers. And quite frankly, those things often attack our heart, don't they? That we tell ourselves that they're failure from us, they attack our heart, and then what happens is that we start getting discouraged. And then all of a sudden we start doing less and less. And worst of all, we ask ourselves this question, how can God actually use me? And then the answer to that becomes, well, he can't. I'm not as good as these other people. And so I guess instead of dismissing those things, it grows and eats away until our lives, our Christian faith, and that becomes passive, unfocused, unfruitful. because we are now convinced that we are not good enough for his service. Sense of failure does attack our faith, but we must never give in to it, should we? God is the God of victory. And when we're under pressure like this, we must learn to turn to him and trust him and acknowledge all the wonderful things and the victory that he's given us. Failure is temporary in our lives. And God understands that and will use that time in our lives to mold us often into the people that he wants us to be. And we need to keep claiming in this world that his forgiveness is the greatest gift that he's given us. His forgiveness and the way that he's shown that by sending his son to come down and to die for us, to take away all the stuff, all the guilt, all the failure in our lives, to take it away and turn us into someone that he wants to use for his own glory. Just want to share a verse with you. Colossians 1:13-14. For he has rescued us from the dominion of darkness and brought us into the kingdom of the Son he loves, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. So I guess that's the message that's been on my heart. So I found it hard to give a talk to you guys. I didn't know whether you wanted to hear rugby. I didn't know whether you wanted to hear what we do, how we do it, what I've learnt. But this whole success-failure thing in my business is pretty relevant. I've got to think about it all the time. And in some ways, I'm more fortunate in my work than a lot of you people are in your work. Because I know here that there are people here that this community couldn't operate if you weren't doing what you did. Unfortunately for me, this community could operate if I didn't do what I did. But one advantage that I have is that my work is pretty obvious in terms of success and failure. And in terms of the measurements that people judge how good I am. And the good thing about that is it keeps me sharp because I've been assessed all the time. And I guess I've been challenged and I've been measured all the time. And whilst I hate that at times, I hate it now because we played poorly against the Hurricanes. And I find it tough. But the positive thing is that you know exactly where you stand. And then you can go and figure out how to do it. Look for those times with your faith. Try to find times that you will get challenged to find out exactly where you're at. Because one of the worst things we can do is go through a life and not have those times that we just become very reflective and we are actually challenged heavily about where we're at in our faith. Because often when we are challenged, we realise that our lives and our faith particularly has been watered down a little bit because we've started to lose that enthusiasm to step out a little bit more because maybe we're carrying a few hurts from a last time we tried and it didn't work very well. That's my talk. What do you think? Nah. So I told you I wasn't very wise at the start, but are we allowed to have some questions or?
That's up to you.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind. Does anyone want to ask me a question? Yes? Good question. I guess I find time the same way that we all find time is by making sure we either get up early or we find time in the day from a personal perspective. I've found for me that when I first started coaching, my wife would almost welcome me back home at the end of the campaign. And that she would tell me later on that I'd just start to switch off more and more from what was happening in the household, and so that was a good measurement for me, or good thing for my wife to tell me that. So I'm trying to make sure I stay a lot more balanced with my time. For me, I lead a home group in our church, and this year I've also looking after Power Station at a Sunday school on a Sunday morning. And the reason I do that is that I've found that when I'm busy, they're the sort of things that slip out of my life really quick, and I've learned that that's not really good for me that that happens. So by committing to some roles, it's sort of almost, and this sounds very unchristian, but it's forced me into having the right balance. So it's those sort of things. Probably because of naturally I'm useless at it. Yep.
Time for faith and work hard. What about work and family? Because family for us as Christians is a priority.
Yep.
That must be hard for you as well.
Yeah, it is hard. I mean, I guess I travel around a lot, but again, I don't think I'm any different from a lot of people in this room. Like, I'm busy, and I guess busyness is something that we get caught up in it. And again, busyness often makes us feel important, whereas reality is that we've got to decide with God what's important, don't we? And then start to determine our lives from that pecking order. So, again, you know, something that I've struggled with, but certainly something that I've picked up some really good techniques. So I don't know if any of you guys read a lot of Ian Grant's stuff about how to be a dad and that sort of stuff. I've picked up a lot from that. I've got a lamppost, a corner that I go around to on the way home. I think this is one of his techniques, that when I go home, I always used to drive up the driveway and be on the phone. And it was always about 7 o'clock or whatever. My kids weren't far away from going to bed, and they'd run out and give me a cuddle, and I'd say, "Oh, can you just leave me for a second? I'll just finish this call." And so I realised I was losing the special moments, and so started to do a technique for me that I picked up, which is I wasn't allowed to go down that road until I'd finished. And so when I did turn down that road, work was finished for me, and I got excited about my family. And so to me, it's just mentally switching into that part of my life. And not getting lazy with it. Yes? You know, that's a really good question, isn't it? Because I have struggled with that for a long, long time. Because I'm not a very good prayer, am I? I think, what do you reckon I should pray for? Because in my heart, I want to win.
But the Crusaders will lose.
No, I don't mind the Crusaders now that they're Australian. Look, that's a really good question, because I've struggled with it for a long time, and I've gone through a whole range of things, and I do find my prayer life is a lot more urgent and excitable just before a big game. So I guess that's called pressure, isn't it, and how we respond. For me, I used to pray that we'd win, and then unfortunately the other coach used to have a bit more prayer power than me. And so I used to go through a process of, God, what do you actually want me to pray for here? And what the answer that has come up with me is that I pray that I will be his vessel on the day, that I will reflect his glory as best that I can, that that I'm there to deal with the ups, deal with the downs, and to try to stay. And the conclusion that I've got to is I've got to try and stay reasonably even in my emotions and my feelings, and not and start considering the needs and the emotions of the people that I'm working with. I'm working with I've got 28 professional rugby players that I manage. I've got 14 professional full-time staff that I manage. Often I want it to be about me as a coach. I want to win. But reality is, I think I've just got to tell God, look, I want to win, but what's more important is that today I'm a Christian for you. And I think that's how I try to pray now. Now, if that's a cop-out, let me know. But that's the conclusion that I've come to. Yes?
Paul says to work for slaves to work for their masters as if they're working for the Lord. Now, your masters want you to win.
Yep.
So in a sense, for you to pray to win is not a bad thing, because that's what we thought to do, to work for our
Yep. Business. Yep. And I'd be lying to myself if I didn't pray for success in the area that I work in. And I don't think I'm any different than anyone else. I think that whatever you do, you want to do it really, really well. And for me, that's winning. But the other answer is that I know that it's not just winning. Like, in terms of, I can be a good coach in Super 14 and not win. And so, and like I often get the, and I'm not picking on you now, Jeff, you get the Crusaders chucked up at you and say, well, look how successful they are, look where the Chiefs are at. But in the last 4 years, before I took over the Chiefs, we were averaging 8th out of 12. The last 4 years, we're averaging 5.5 on the ladder at the end of the year, and that's out of 14 teams. We're in the top 4 to 5 teams across most statistics in the Super 14 in terms of consistency. The things that we've been doing about driving character and values for our players has actually become quite a powerful foundation. And there are other lots of variables that define success in my business. Like, for some reason, and I must admit I got discouraged last week, the sense of failure thing, because not only did we lose to the Hurricanes, but I kept losing my top players through injury. And I find that hard, because I feel like all the hard work we're doing gets lost. But reality is that if I get down, if I think, hey, this ain't going to work, that's going to reflect it on my organisation, on people, and probably more importantly to God, other people are going to see that I'm giving up. And that's probably the worst thing, isn't it? Yes? What lifts my spirit? My 7-year-old jumping on me in the morning lifts my spirit. Waking up and seeing my wife lifts my spirit. Knowing that someone gave me this analogy sometimes, is that often we get stressful and worry about what we're doing because we keep hitting potholes in our lives. But in reality, the times that we get really stressful aren't when we hit potholes, but it's when we hit potholes and we're on the wrong road. And I think it's knowing that you're on the right road. And I must admit, I go to work and I love what I do. I feel I'm in the right place. I feel that this is where God wants me right now. And sometimes I wonder about that and I question that. And sometimes I find the negative media stuff and all that, and it really gets to me, but I guess I just keep getting reminded. And I'll give you an example of that. I had a player last week, played a game, didn't play that well, and then mucked up that evening off the field. Not badly, but enough, broke some team rules and stuff like that. Now, that happens regularly, but we've got our internal process to do it. So that person got up and fixed the problem with the team, apologised, and that was cool. I was talking to him on the Tuesday, and I was trying to get him focused for this week about the tasks that I wanted to do. And he kept saying, "Fozzie, I'm sorry. Sorry. Sorry I did that." And I said to him, whatever his name was, which I won't tell you, "I don't know if you read the Bible much, but there's a really neat verse that when we stuff up, God takes our sins and his forgiveness, he takes them as far away as the east is from the west." And I said to him, "You need to know I'm not God." And I think he was feeling really good there for a minute. I said to him, "You need to know I'm not God and I'm not nearly as good as forgiveness as him. But it's over." And for him, that was like a huge relief. And so, why do I coach? What do I do? Maybe it's for those little moments right now. Plus, I want to win.
Yes. Ian, yep. Maybe one more question, and the other people have got questions. You can see Ian afterwards.
Yeah. Well, it is an important question because it's in relation to the changing in the rules of rugby and the way things seem to be just flowing so fast. Do you think your players have failed to take hold of the changes, or have you failed to take hold of the changes? Because you've got players there that are so fast, and yet the combinations seem to just lose their places. And we just, I mean, I've got a friend, I go and watch rugby with him, and he told me all the answers that you don't seem to be implementing.
So, Dave, can you give me a shit? Yeah, well, first of all, why didn't you write down his notes?
You were saying them so fast I couldn't keep up.
Hey, look, I'm surrounded by experts, and I'm the only stupid one. So, but can I just say that I'll tell you a couple of things, is that the new rules, we have got the back line that's geared up for the new rules. First of all, I need to get that back line on the park. So we need to get Leonard, Kahui, those guys back on the park. Second of all, the new rules haven't changed the essence of rugby, which is about your forward play. So against the Blues, we got out-scrummaged, out-line-out, we got no ball. Against the Waratahs, we got that bit right. Against the Hurricanes, we also got that bit right, but we failed at the breakdown against a very good loose forward trio. So we were struggling at the breakdown. And I won't get too technical into this, but the essence of the rules now is that the speed of the game, the difference from last year is it's given you more opportunities to steal the ball. And so the Hurricanes, for example, statistically had the same success at ruck count that we did. So even though people think, well, hey, you know, we've got to hide in that area, reality is we had the same successful percentage of taking the ball and getting good ball back. But they stole 5 balls off us at times that we couldn't afford it, and they scored off 3 of them. Now, all of a sudden, because they do that, they're brilliant, we're useless. And we've lost our best 3 players at the breakdown, which are Marty Holler, Stephen Bates, and Keith Robinson. And so we're rebuilding in that one facet of the game. And like last week, for example, we had 2 ball-carrying loose forwards, Meese and Luaki, and only 1 guy working at the ball, which is Latimer, and the answer is you can't have that anymore. You actually need at least 2 guys working hard at the ball. So I'll check with you later, see whether it tallies up with your mate, and maybe I got it wrong. But the essence is that's kind of the essence of where we're at. And we're a lot better than that. But in some ways, particularly in our tight 5, we're in a top international competition. We are light on experience. And the trouble is everyone looks at Sidivini, Muliaina, those guys, and think, hey, we're geared up for the new rules. Well, we are, but first you've got to win the turnover ball. First you've got to get scrum on your own terms and that sort of stuff. And that's where we are building, and that's going to be our challenge. But big challenge tonight. Cheetah's a really big physical pack. Now, how we cope with that. But, that's my read on that. But just to give you one other thing, and I've shared this some other talks, is that at the end of a campaign, and I'll finish with this, at the end of a campaign, 2 years ago I did an analysis on it, and there's a system that tallies up all the tasks that happen in a game of rugby. There's about my team does 1,400 individual tasks in a normal 80-minute game. And the team that won it, or the team with the best skill level at Super 14 2 years ago, got 86% of those tasks correct. So that was their performance. And this is just statistically. The team that lost got 83% correct. So you're in a professional game, and for those that can do their maths, and someone better help Jeff out here, but 86 minus 83 equals 3% margin of error. And so, thank you. And so when you're looking at the margin of error, do I think I'm a failure? Do I think that my team's failed when we lose by 20 points? Well, sometimes yes, and emotionally always yes. But then when I go back and do my work and go through my processes and study and talk to them, generally I find out that the loss comes down to some very small points. And it's nailing those little details, and it's not ignoring those little parts that make the difference. So, anyway, hey, thank you very much for your time. Thanks for taking the effort to get out of bed, and God bless you all.